Good morning. All right, if I can have folks that are standing take a seat, and we're going to call this meeting to order. If you can please do roll call.
Alvarez. Arandula. Brack.
Here.
Cole.
Here.
Diaz.
Present.
Gomez.
Here.
Hall.
Here.
McClellan. McWhorter.
Here.
Mullen.
Here.
Rios.
Here.
Roberts. Salas.
Here.
Sankey.
Here.
Zaff.
Thank you. And before we proceed, I'm going to ask that we actually today do the Pledge of Allegiance by the request of Councilmember Bragg. It is Flag Day today, so it's appropriate. So if we can all stand and face the flag. And Ms. Bragg, please guide us. Thank you. We have a special recognition. We have Councilmember Jim Cunningham present today, and I know that he gave a lot of his time to uplift the work that we are all doing here. So we want to take a moment and acknowledge him today. So we're going to go to the podium, or from here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where?
Well, go over there. So it is with great pride and honor that I stand here today with one of our outgoing board members, Jim Cunningham. As the board member representing the city of Poway, Jim has been a member of this board for over 11 years. He has dedicated significantly time and energy to help make MTS one of the best transit agencies in our county, in our country. I think one of the most important skills that he brought to the MTS board was his business focus experience, and that is definitely something that is extremely critical as we're making business decisions as well. He is an attorney by trade, and I'm not sure if I agree with this, but and you can never have too many attorneys on our team. That's questionable, but yes. Yeah, I'm just joking. Definitely is a strong trait to be bringing to the board. He has provided great guidance and insights for the agency. He helped guide MTS through the tough times and has been here to celebrate many of our accomplishments, such as the ridership record that we had in 2015 and 2016, the system improvements like the trolley renewal, service expansions like our rapids, technology improvements like our mobile ticketing, and many more things that we have done. Jim's dedication to public service and to transit is something that this agency will benefit from many, many years. And he brought a sense of humor along with it. He has articulated a strong advocacy for our riders. He's not afraid to ask the tough questions and always comes prepared. Jim, thank you so much for serving on the MTS board. You will be missed, but we also wish you the best in your future endeavors. On behalf of the board, I would like to present you with a token of our appreciation with a plaque saying, "We appreciate you, Jim Cunningham, on behalf of the leadership and dedicated service to the people of San Diego County from MTS." So thank you so much.
Choice. Thank you very much. Yeah. So here's a forewarning. You know, I'm Irish. I'm a lawyer, and now I'm an ex-politician, so this could take a while. So get comfortable. I came here about 51 years old. I spent one-fifth of my life with you guys here, and it's been such an honor. And you guys, each one of you, it's just been an honor for me to have worked with. I've learned so much from all of you, and we've been through, as Georgette was saying, some tough times and some great times. And I was just talking back here. I mean, I was here when we wrapped the first trolley, right? And now we have 70 trolleys that are wrapped out there, and they're kind of fun. But I have to say, and I see most of them over there, this staff and everyone that works at MTS has just been remarkable. They really make us look fantastic. So I applaud all of you. Thank you so much for all your hard work and everything you've done in there. Paul Jablonski, incredible. It was such an honor working with you. He's a man amongst men. I was lucky enough to go on my first MTS tour. I went to Tampa to the national bus, the APTB, ABCDEFG, whatever it's called. I got to see a bus rodeo and learned that there were no horses at the bus rodeo, but it was fantastic. But to walk with Paul and see the admiration that they have across the nation, but internationally as well, was just remarkable. And we're also very, very lucky. So with that, good luck. Keep working hard. Don't screw around with my 490, the only bus we have in Poway. And you'll never see me again. Okay, thank you.
And as you're making your rounds, I believe our mayor from Chula Vista has a few words.
Yes, I just wanted to remark about my experience in serving with Jim Cunningham and what a great experience it has been, and learning just what kind of guy he was, especially in our closed sessions. And using his expertise, he really was an asset to us in closed session. I always appreciated his level-headedness and his ability to really get to the core of the issue. And so it was really great fun knowing you the short time that I did, but I really feel that you're just an awesome man, a stand-up guy, and we're going to miss you a lot.
Thanks, Mary. Before I forget, I'm leaving you in incredibly good hands, Deputy Mayor John Mullen. If I had to be replaced, it should be replaced by him. So good luck to you, John. Thank you.
Thank you once again, Jim. Yes, thank you all. So moving on with our agenda, if I could please get a motion for approval of the minutes of our May 10th. Would appreciate that. Thank you. Councilmember Laurie, in there. Second? Yeah. Do you have a second by Mayor? Yes, Salas. All right, we got it. Motion by Councilmember Bragg and second by Mayor Salas. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Once again, moves forward. We have several comments from the request to speak to us today. Ms. Martha Walsh. You will have 3 minutes.
Martha Welch, moving to 9-6 was a bad, for 25 is a bad, bad. Because right now we have one bus right now, once an hour. There's a there's two building for seniors, and they can't go anywhere because it's hard to go anywhere. There's a meeting. There's a new meals also, and they can't go back because there's only 1 hour. That's not right. You know why? Because the mad caller doesn't like me. That's why they changed that bus, because I go there all the time, and that's what's going on. It's mean for you to do that, because once an hour, it's hard to do that. Also the 11, you know, same thing. You move that also, and it's not right what you did the 11 also, because it's supposed to be the 11 to the 12, but it didn't me. It just out in space, you know, that's not right. Now, you have a chance right now on the purple line to get bathrooms, because right now you don't have bathrooms on the trolley or the buses. There's no bathrooms. That's a problem with this county. There's no bathrooms. You don't care about people. Obviously, you change these things all the time. And it's wrong when you did this bus. It's very hard for the seniors. There's, like I said, there's two buildings of seniors right there. They take the bus all the time. And I used to ride. There's always people on the bus. And now it's hard. And I think it's me when you did this. And I don't remember any discussion about this bus or anything. So I think it's wrong what you do. MTS, I don't think you care about people, but you do. It's been going on so long, changing all these buses, and 929 stops outside the bus stop on there, and you change all these buses all the time, and it's not working. People want to ride the bus, but you're making it hard to ride the bus because you're changing so many things. It doesn't make it easier for us to ride the bus.
Ms. Judy Johnson. Hello. I'm a social worker with Palomar Home Health, although I'm here as a consumer. I'm not representing them. I cover the area of all of North County, as far south as Mira Mesa, and it goes all the way over the coast to the coast of Carlsbad. Since MTS has implemented the rule for paratransit, the lift van, we used to call it at least in North County, where they have to go for a personal interview to qualify, I've only been able to enroll one person. It's too much of a barrier. It's too cumbersome for the patients to go get in a van and go 30 miles just for an interview just to qualify when you've already got professionals that are qualifying them on paper. I really don't see how that's cost effective for you to have someone place that extra barrier. Another thing to be considered is safety for women. I'm starting to hear from single women that it's not safe. Just yesterday, I had a patient, 62 years old. She had recurrent brain growth in her head. So her doctor told her, this is not going to go away. You have to be permanently disabled. So I'm talking to her. She has to give up her car. She gave up her job. She lives on $900 a month. And I told her about the transit, you know, the lift van, and she says, you want me to get in a van with a strange person and go to a strange location? She says, that's not safe. And I hate to admit it, that this woman with a brain tumor probably has more common sense than most of us, you know. That just never even occurred to me in the past. So even with the patients that I do enroll, we have a hard enough time getting them to use the van even then, much less having to put them another barrier in front of them to have access to the lift van. That's just human nature. When you're sick, when you're ill, you're weak, you don't have the wherewithal to barely get through your life, much less having to jump through more hoops to get on a bus or to get to the doctor. So that's why I'm here. I just wanted you to reconsider maybe putting the effort into the people that read the applications, maybe train them better. And if you do have people that are maybe, I don't know, scamming the system, I would think that your bus drivers can notify you and say, hey, let's re-review this case. Because I just think it's just too much for people to drive to another location just to qualify to see if they can take a bus. So, I mean, not a bus, a van. But anyway, thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We'll look into that. So with that, moving on to the consent items, I have no requests from the public to pull in the items. Any requests from the board members? I see none. Could I have a motion to move the consent agenda forward?
I'll move that.
Thank you. Second? Thank you, Mr. Hall. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Moves forward. With that, we have no closed session today. But we have item 27, the public, we're going to open up a public hearing to hear on the South Bay Rapid implementation, and I'll move it, hand it over to Dennis.
Good morning, thank you. We're here this morning with a public hearing for the implementation of the South Bay Rapid Project, to be known as Route 225. This is actually the culmination of over 25 years of plans and planning to bring rapid transit to the eastern portion of Chula Vista. This is a project developed by Sandag and constructed by Sandag. It started in 1991 with a dedicated right-of-way going out East Palomar Street, and in fact, for years and years, if you went out to East Palomar in Chula Vista, you'd see little signs on the median that said rapid transit, future rapid transit corridor. The project has been in planning for the last approximately 8 to 10 years and in construction over the past 3 years. The project itself is about $128 million in capital costs. Again, Sandag is constructing the project. That cost includes 17 brand new buses, which are being delivered right now. There are 11 stations along the route, including 4 downtown, which are actually in service and were completed a couple of years ago, currently being used by our mid-city and I-15 rapid routes. There's an exclusive guideway down the middle of Palomar Street, or East Palomar Street in Chula Vista, from approximately Medical Center Court out to Millennia. And that includes a bus-only, bus and pedestrian-only bridge over the 125 freeway, and a brand new transit center in Otay Mesa on the west side of the 905 freeway, across from the port of entry. Approximate cost to operate the route will be about $7 million a year at FY20 dollars, so that'll be a new item in the MTS budget. However, like all of the other rapid services that we operate, the net subsidy is reimbursed to us out of Transnet funds. I mentioned that the downtown stations, the 4 downtown stations, were completed in 2016. there's some other elements. I included a map on here of the route. This East Palomar station that's right off the 805 freeway, this was completed last year. All of the flat work and the parking lot, the park and ride, and the direct access ramps onto the middle of the 805 freeway are all completed. The remaining section of the route going south to the Otay Mesa border has been split into 5 different construction phases. Those are all either completed or in various stages of close to completion. So what we're proposing for implementation, since this is completed, is to begin in September as a pilot route that will run peak only period between the East Palomar Station and downtown, and then in January, when the rest of the facilities are nearly completed, opening the remainder of the route. There's a couple remaining elements that would go beyond January. One is the segment of fixed guideway between Heritage and Medical Center Court, where we're actually widening the roadway there. That's going to be completed in spring of 2019. And then we're working with Caltrans and Sandag and CHP on being able to operate buses in the shoulders of the 805 freeway between the 54 and the 94. So that's an ongoing project that we anticipate should start in spring or early summer of 2019. So the September 2018 implementation, again, would be between this station that's completed down here and downtown along the 805 and 94 corridors, serving the existing stations in downtown San Diego. That would operate peak hours only every 15 minutes, and it would only operate northbound in the morning and southbound in the afternoon. This would start the service, allow us to begin acclimating people down in the eastern Chula Vista area to having the rapid service. We'll have the buses delivered, ready to go, and be able to start attracting some ridership. With that park and ride lot there, even though we won't have the full service all the way into eastern Chula Vista, we'll have an opportunity for people to park there. And we also have our local route 712 that operates every 15 minutes as one of our core network routes that goes east-west along Palomar that will connect to that. Then in June 2019, we would begin the full route all the way between Otay Mesa and downtown San Diego, operating both directions 7 days a week, every 30 minutes, with a 15-minute overlay during peak periods. I put a few pictures in here. This is what the stations look like right now. The Lomas Verdes and Heritage stations are complete. Essentially, and most of the guideway is complete between Olympic Parkway and Heritage. You can see the transit center in the upper upper right corner. The Otay Mesa Transit Center is rapidly being completed. And then down in the lower left corner, that's actually what the guideway looked like prior to construction. So we're here today because our board policy 42 does require us to hold a public hearing for a major service change, and our policy defines five different criteria that constitute a major service change, and one of those is implementation of a new route. So even though this is a SANDAG developed and constructed and planned route, since MTS will be the operator, our policy 42 does require that we hold a public hearing and that the board vote on it and approve the implementation. So what we're asking today is that we hold the public hearing and also that the board receive the Title VI report. And this is the report that we do whenever we have a major service change that evaluates the impact to low-income and minority communities. This is an FTA requirement. That report is attached to the agenda item. The other part of the recommendation today is that we make this a permanent change. Typically, when we implement a new route, we implement it for up to 12 months before the board makes it permanent after a public hearing. What we're recommending is that since this project is already developed and constructed and the subsidy is paid for by Transnet, that we make it permanent at this point rather than doing a 12-month pilot. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dennis. This is exciting. So thank you for bringing it forward and for having this hearing today. Are there any comments, Mayor Salas?
I do have a question in regards to the slide when you're talking about the implementation plan, and you're talking about having it directional in the peak hours only. So that would mean if you were catching it on the Palomar station in the morning, then it would be only running north?
It would run north in the morning and then in the afternoon south.
Oh, I see. But not the two directions.
Right. That would begin in January. So in September, it would just be bringing people from that park and ride and from the local route down on Palomar Street up into downtown, and then in the afternoon reversing the direction and bringing people back.
So it would seem to me that you would want to, even though you don't have the amount of traffic traveling south during that time, wouldn't you want to offer that as part of the pilot program?
We have talked about that, and we actually went back and forth a little bit with SANDAG about that. We could take people, there is a time penalty, so there's an additional cost because you're running through all of the stations coming back, rather than just going one direction, then coming back all the way on the freeway from Santa Fe Depot. So there's a time penalty and there's a cost to it. And we felt that the major demand was going northbound in the morning and southbound in the afternoon. So from a cost perspective, as well as a time savings, we are able to do it with fewer buses to have them just cycle back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand the cost. If you had it going in both directions, you're saying that, going in the opposite direction of the rush hour, you would have to stop at all the different stations and it would not be a rapid?
It just means that when you come back out of downtown, so in the morning when it gets to Santa Fe Depot, it'll get on the freeway and go directly back to Chula Vista. So mm-hmm. What it would do running it in both directions is we would turn it around at Santa Fe Depot and run it back through downtown San Diego to hit all of the stations going outbound as well.
Okay, so I trust that you've done all the traffic modeling and the economics, so I trust that. It was just curious to me, and so I'll just make the comment that, you know, we're really looking forward to it in the South Bay, that we think that this is going to be a terrific convenience for a lot of our commuters, and that I think that if we can show that we're having, you know, rapid and convenient travel, that we'll get the ridership up just like we did with the trolley. So nobody has any questions. I'd like to move the recommendation.
Thank you. Yes, Councilmember Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so I do have some questions, and I've had actually residents come to my office and ask a lot of different questions, and before I even start asking the questions, I mean, they clearly they're a little late in coming to me, I think, because I mean, this project really is pretty much done. But I think I need to ask the questions because they've asked me. I've gone to our staff, and I think they've answered most of the questions, but I think I'd like to ask questions as well in this public setting. So one of the things that folks are talking about really in that folks are asking questions are really concerned about the Hedden Camp school area, where they feel that it's going to create a safety issue. And so what I'd like to do is hear from you with regards to that. So let me just ask some of the, let me just go through some of my questions. Maybe you could fill in the gaps or whatever. And I think I know the answer to some of them, but hopefully you can also reiterate the answers so that the folks that I've been talking to can, they've heard it from our staff, and hopefully they can hear it from MTS as well. So one of the things is stoplights. Right now there's stop signs along that route. And what they're telling me is there's not going to be any stoplights. And from our reading, and maybe you can tell me if I'm correct, there are going to be a signal all the way to Oleander, is that correct, from the east side of Hedden Camp School to Oleander?
Right. Any place where we have the guideway, there are traffic signals, because the traffic signals actually control the buses.
Okay. All right. Great. And then naturally the concerns are the size of the lanes, the buffering between traffic and pedestrians, and one of the things is naturally is the bike lanes were 8 feet, they're now going to 5, and my understanding is that 5 feet is a standard width, is that correct for the bike lanes?
I'm not sure about that. I know that this process has gone through city planning and environmental, and in fact SANDAG has held a meeting out at the elementary school, and so I know that there's been quite a bit of process, and it's hard for me to speak to the design and how that all came about over the past 3 years. Since we're primarily the bus operator along the route, but I have to assume if they're putting in a 5-foot bike lane that there's some standard that says that's okay.
One more question, I'm not sure if you're the right person to ask, but one of the things as well is the preemption of signals. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, the traffic signals there will allow the buses to keep moving along the corridor.
Okay, and so if somebody hits a button to cross, in this report, I think it was in this report, it said that pedestrians will get a right of way, a priority. Is that correct? Because I think on the federal side, it's public safety, transit, and then pedestrians.
Pedestrians.
I know it's not a big deal, but people they're asking me, so I want to give them an answer.
Sure. Pedestrians will have a separate phase, so that'll be different. Obviously, crossing Palomar, it's not going to allow a bus to continue going through when you have pedestrians crossing.
Okay, hold on. So pedestrians have priority over the transit?
Well, they'll be in a separate phase. You know, I don't know exactly how that's going to be programmed with the signal, whether somebody hits a button at the exact same time a bus preempts the signal. I'm not sure how that's going to work. So we can certainly find out a little bit more information about that for you.
Right. So I should be asking that to Sandag.
Yeah, Sandag is the entity that's actually building and constructing it, but I know that they're working closely with the city of Chula Vista on signal coordination and design and that kind of thing.
Great. I have one question, and I certainly support the project as well.
I believe, yes, there's someone here from Sandag?
Yes.
Okay, if you could please come to the podium or if you can grab a seat, that would be great.
Hi, my name is Omar Tay. I'm a senior engineer at Sandag. I'm also project manager on South Bay. And to address your questions, which are all very good questions, as far as the bike lane is concerned, 5 foot is a Caltrans standard for bike lanes. So it's something that we see very frequently within the city and it's not uncommon. And then as far as the pedestrian question, if a pedestrian initiates a phase, and the phase is started, then that phase will not be truncated. The pedestrians will be allowed to cross, and the buses will wait for the pedestrians to cross, and then the bus will be allowed to go through.
Thank you. I just closed all my notes for my questions, and I probably would have had a couple more for you, but I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure.
All right.
So just, but if the bus gets
preempted,
then a pedestrian pushes, the bus will then go through, and then the pedestrian will come after that.
Correct. Right. The pedestrian will be held until it's safe for them to cross.
So it's whoever gets there first.
Correct.
That's the easy way to put it.
Yes.
I think the concerns in that area are that there's a school there, mm-hmm. that they're going across seven lanes of traffic where they didn't have that before, and so naturally the signaling is a big issue.
Correct. And so there's a couple of things on that. Number one, we have biweekly meetings with the school, meet with them to talk about all the issues during construction. We've had a good working relationship with them and have made adjustments on things that they've observed in the field. Secondly, I think the six lanes is a little inaccurate in that two of the lanes are bus guideways. These buses are, you know, maximum four buses an hour. They're professional drivers from MTS. They're in a center running guideway. So it's not like you're crossing a six lane arterial. It's two lanes on each side and then two bus lanes in the middle. And all the signaling and all the safety measures are there so that the buses being in the middle of the road is actually a safer design, in my opinion, than actually have them on the side of the road. So I think we've taken all measures to make sure that it's a safe program.
Right. And you just brought up another question. So the 712 is the route that goes through there, correct?
Correct.
Is there any out turns for them to pull in, or are they going to be in traffic when they make their stops?
Is the 712 the local? There's opportunities for some of the local buses to use the guideway, and then depending on the routes, there's also exit points for them to, I think one of the routes turns on Heritage, so there's an exit point for them to get on Heritage. So where appropriate, and I don't know the specific routes off the top of my head, but where appropriate, the local buses can use the guideway, but I also understand that some of the local buses will continue to be side running.
So specifically in front of Hedden Camp in the school, because I think that's where people are saying, you know, other areas, fine, it's a great program, but when there's a lot of kids walking around in these areas and you create impediments for the local bus, as people go around and dodging the buses, it could create a hazard. So specifically in front of Hedden Camp, is there any turnouts there for local buses?
Not turnouts, that I believe there's the local bus stop is within the mixed flow, not in the guideway in front of Hedden Camp.
So that was one of the concerns, and I get it. I this started way back in 2000. There was plenty of public notifications, and you know, what do we do now with folks coming forward and ask? I mean, it's tough, but I think we just need to ask some of the questions to make sure that people understand that this process has been a long process, a lot of public discussion, yeah, is a perfect, looking at it, no, but I think generally speaking, it's a good program, or a good project.
Right, and we've reiterated in the past, I mean, if there's anything that we can do to make this program better, we're certainly open to that, so we encourage any comments or any suggestions.
Thank you, Councilmember Diaz. Councilmember Alvarez? Oh, Mayor?
I just wanted to respond in relative to the communication that we have had with the Hidden Camp community. And I personally have had at least two meetings in our conference room where we brought together our city staff and our traffic engineers. They've met with the SANDAG staff on several occasions, and there's no amount of guarantees that you can give them that's going to change their mind on, you know, a certain segment of that community. You know, it's something that's a very emotional issue for them, and certainly I really believe that it's actually a safer project than what is now, and that the crossing for those children will actually be safer than it was before. But people get very, very emotional about changes in their community, and especially if it has anything to do with children. But that community has had no lack of attention and meetings, and we're still open to meeting with them as this project goes forward. And I think what will happen is that when the project does get implemented and that they see the operation of it, that then that's when the fears will diminish. But the whole name of it, Bus Rapid Transit, brings to mind to many people that buses are just going to be whizzing by there, and that's not the case at all. They're going to be held to the same speed limits that anybody else is. So I sympathize with the public and have when they have come to me. But what I've told them is that, you know, we are elected to make tough decisions. And when we make our decisions, we have to look at the broader good of the public. And sometimes it doesn't fit with what they want, right? And so it's been a tough issue for that community.
Thank you for that and for that sharing what the a little bit of the history that has been going on. Councilmember Alvarez.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the report. I have a couple of questions on the park and rides in National City and the one in on 8th Street. What are the buses going to be doing when they're there? Are they exiting?
So the 8th Street and Plaza Boulevard are those are actually future stations, and those will be completed once the 805 improvements are completed. And I don't know if there's a timeline for that at this point.
No, not at this point. Those are future potential improvements, but we're not actively working on that at the moment.
And those would be median stations like you see, presumably median stations like you see in Mid-City.
Okay, so right now, those are not stops.
Correct.
Okay, so it's going from East Palomar, the next stop is in downtown San Diego.
Correct.
Okay, and then this shoulder pilot, from the 54 to the 94, we had some discussions at some point with SANDAG about doing the same thing when the buses get on the 94, because there was a very, I don't want to say controversial, it wasn't a favorite of the community, but a preferred alternative, but there was this plan to do some expansion on the 94, which I think has been put on the back burner for now. Are we looking at taking those buses on the shoulder of the 94, or how was the shoulder pilot selected?
There's a segment of the 94, I believe that it starts about Home Avenue. And right. I should mention Beverly Neff is our planner for the South Bay area, and she's the planner for this route as well. And I neglected to mention her, and then Omar, thank you from SANDAG. So there is a small segment of the 94 where the buses would be on the shoulder.
There will be? Is that all the way to downtown?
I believe that it's from about Home Avenue east.
East or west?
Going east. Going east. So as you're going eastbound on the 94, you'd get into the shoulder right about Home Avenue. And then that would take you on to the 805 southbound ramp.
So on the way back. Okay.
Exactly.
Sorry, I'm thinking on the way north.
Yeah, so on the way north, there's currently the flyover bridge that goes from northbound 805 to right. westbound 94. And so there will be a bus, buses operating in their own separate lane along that bridge before they'd merge into traffic. So there's going to be a very short segment in the 94.
So they'll have to cross over right after 43rd Street and get all the way to that exit to the 94, come over the flyover, and then they're going to be in regular traffic all the way downtown.
Right, like the rapid, mid-city rapid,
right.
excuse me, the I-15 rapid that comes off the southbound okay. 15 as well.
Okay. Is there a consideration being given to potentially doing a bus on shoulder? Or after, I guess maybe after the pilot, is that something that could come next? I'm just trying to figure out where
sure.
that conversation left off.
Well, I think we're excited about the pilot. The pilot is something we've been in planning with CHP and Caltrans for a couple of years now, with Sandag leading that effort as well. There's a variety of technologies that'll be debuted on this. They'll actually hold the on-ramp traffic from getting onto the freeway while the bus crosses the on-ramp. So that's
wow.
going to be a new technology. So I think there's a wait and see approach to see how all of this works and how it's all coordinated. And we're hoping it's going to be successful and everybody's going to think it's great, and then we'll
yeah.
be able to expand that.
So how long is the pilot going for?
I don't recall the exact pilot.
Okay, I'm really interested in that one, so thanks for sharing. And then the only other question was on the buses are going to be the regular size buses right now?
They're articulated buses.
They are articulated. Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
All
they're
right.
the same. They'll look exactly the same as the I-15 rapid buses.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you for all those questions. So we do have a motion by Mayor Salas. Has it been second? Second by Councilman Mr. Diaz. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moves forward. Thank you. And with that, we are moving on to a discussion item, the creative marketing branding on-call service contract. Turn it over to you, Rob.
Good morning. Thank you. Okay, so I have a couple of items this morning. The first one is our marketing on-call services contract. Before I get into the presentation, which will ultimately recommend that we enter a contract with Civilian, I just want to introduce two members of the Civilian team, Stacy Nelson-Smith, who is the CEO of Civilian, and then Sean Conacher. He is going to be the project manager of the contract, if you guys approve it. Marketing on-call contract is a contract that encompasses all the disciplines of marketing, and heretofore MTS marketing department has acted without the help of an agency. 10 years ago we did have some constraints budgetarily, and so I kind of brought in all of the services in-house, and we've kind of set up our group to provide all advertising and marketing components within the in-house staff. And so this is kind of a list of all the things that marketing does now, everything from customer information. We do advertising, we do the graphic support of advertising, the media buying, we have the website, internet, we do the internal communications. So all of these things are handled in-house. We also do a couple of the advertising revenue contracts. Those are under our purview. But you know, we have a lot of new challenges and opportunities, and I think it's time for us to get help from an outside services provider. We have our transit optimization plan that we're in the second stage now of implementing. We have initiated a ridership campaign. It's a choose transit campaign with our tagline, changing the way San Diego moves. This is a big initiative, and I think a Civilian is perfectly positioned to help us out on that. We've had some preliminary talks, and I think they're totally on board with our approach, and I think they can really complement what we're doing there. Again, the sales tax initiative is going to be a big lift for all of us. We have a public outreach component that's going to kind of help develop that plan. And then once we get that plan developed, there's a public education component. We go out to the public and tell them why this plan will benefit public transportation in San Diego. And then the other big effort that we've got going on is the next generation fare collection. And we'll probably have a contractor on board by the end of the year to start working on that. And in parallel, we want to start building up support and excitement for that new fare collection system, and civilian can help us do that. So again, there's a wide area of marketing disciplines that civilian can help us with. Just briefly, the selection process went through all of our normal competitive bid processes. We issued the RFP. We got 9 responses, interviewed the top 4 there. You see civilian, Cook Schmidt, Nuffer Smith Tucker, and Southwest Strategies. Those were narrowed down to civilian and Southwest. And it was a comprehensive effort. We did several interviews, and the last interviews we really honed in on the Measure A component and capabilities in that regard. You know, civilian really came to the table. I think they brought more enthusiasm for this than any of the other groups. In preparing this presentation, went to their website. And you know what they bring it all together. They're about social change, and their tagline, where there's a we, there's a way. And I think this their policy statement, their mission statement down there really does align with what we have to do. You know, we have to start a movement. We have to harness the power of we, and we have to change things. We have to change the way people perceive public transportation. So civilians got a lot of experience. They had the broadest experience of the groups that we interviewed. Most notably, they did the work for LA Metro in their sales tax measure. It was an intensive 4-month campaign education campaign that they did to get the approval of voters there. They've done work with North County Transit System, San Jose International Airport, and Southern California Association of Governments. So they're well versed in working with public agencies. Locally, County of San Diego, Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College, and then they've done lots of branding for other entities as well. And they have offices here in San Diego, LA, and Sacramento. These are some of the examples of their work that they did for the tax initiative up in LA. This was their education campaign. And they really did, we were really impressed with the way that they segmented the market. And they did this through social media, but really did a mosaic. They developed these mosaics of the likely voters in LA, the channels that they were getting information with, and the messages that would move them. So they did a really great job in presenting that and did ultimately get the necessary votes for that tax measure. Here's some of their other creative samples that they did for the North County Transit District, and they did increase ridership. And then they've done, you know, they've taken products from early concept and taken it through all of the product branding, packaging, all of that kind of that stuff to, and also to market that. Project costs, they were very competitive too, and they brought down their costs to meet our budgetary needs. So $150 an hour for all of the on-call creative services and $95 for admin services. In the scope of work, we kind of looked at the 5-year effort and put categories in there and estimated how much time we would need to accomplish those tasks. And so we have flexibility as we go forward and as our needs change to pick and choose those disciplines that we have civilian help us with. And so this is a 5-year contract. It's a 3-year base. The contract is not to exceed this $491,150 limit, and the recommendation is that the Board of Directors authorize the Chief Executive Officer to execute the contract for up to 3-year base term, 2 1-year options, and that those option years are exercised at the CEO's discretion. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. There's no public comment for this. Item, any board member questions or comments?
I have Comments.
Thank you. Brett.
Mr. Shoup, thank you. And I just wanted to applaud your enthusiasm over the years, and I think that's reflected from the company that you have brought to us. You have done an amazing job, and I've been here at MTS for 10 years now and kind of watched you help grow this entire department. So my hat is off to you. But this is an exciting new chapter for us as well. So I would move the item.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you. Mary?
Yes, so I did have a question. So everything's going to be done outside?
No, I mean, we will continue to do the majority of work. So that list that I showed you at the very beginning, mm-hmm. those are still going to be under our purview. I mean, all of the customer information, the mm-hmm. scheduled printing, the brochures printing, some of the advertising that we do with local colleges and the visitor market, a lot of that stuff we're keeping here. It's this expanded capability uh-huh. to promote the tax measure, to do the branding for the next gen fair collection, and to help us out too with our campaign. I mean, I think, mm-hmm. you know, to bring in their expertise and add to what we're already doing is going to be really beneficial.
Okay, great, because I think you do a great job. And this morning as I was writing up the elevator, I had a discussion with one of the members of your staff who told me that she had been here for over 30 years, and she was still really excited about her job. So you have a great staff, and you've done a great job too.
Thank you.
Just wanted to put that comment out there, and I should have gotten her name, but I didn't.
Thank you for that. Councilmember Staff.
Thank you. I'm just curious, have we used an outside marketing for this before, ever?
Not in the last 10 years. When I first got here, we did have an advertising firm under contract. But as I said, we had some budgetary constraints, and I brought most of those services in-house.
Okay. So this is really to try to, at the end game, to try to increase ridership.
That's a big component of this. The ridership campaign that we've initiated, they're going to bring their expertise and make it better.
So what would be, you said primarily or mostly, what else?
Well, then, the Measure A, I think that's going to be a big component.
Okay.
Right. So all of the public outreach that we do leading up to developing that plan, they'll help us with that. They'll also do the public education campaign once we have that plan to let people know the benefits of that plan.
So the education is really to try to get more ridership.
And more money. Yes.
And more money. Right. Because more ridership equals more money, although more subsidies, if the ridership, and it's really bad if all the ridership growth, or primarily, is in that paratransit category.
It's true. I mean, the ridership campaign is a big initiative for us. I mean, we've got to pull out all the stops to help reverse that trend.
I'll definitely support this, but I'd like to have, you know, from when it starts, like quarterly updates about how we're doing versus, you know, how we were the year before, and then how much money, and then you have to deduct all the money that we spent on it as well to see if this is actually something that's effective. Because really, at the end of the day, we can do all the marketing in the world, but it really comes down to convenience, cost, safety. I mean, people, it's like, wow, that looks really cool, branding and marketing and everything. But like with my daughter, she'll ride the trolley all day long from campus to the transit center, but she's just no way going to get on the transfer bus because it takes, I think, 30-some stops to get her a mile from where she needs, or half a mile from where she needs to go. So, you know, at the end of the day, she'd love to ride it. I'd love for her to ride it. I don't want to buy, you know, have her get a car. But it really comes down to those things. So anyway, I'll support this, but I would really like to have quarterly updates on, you know, performance measures using this marketing company so that we know if it's working. And I don't know, do we even have any benchmarks? Or we're just like, okay, we got 10 more riders. We're expecting, you know, do we have any expectations?
We will develop those as we bring them on board. And I'd be happy to do some quarterly reporting too.
Okay, that would be great. But yeah, I think we need to have some expectations to give them and what, you know, what we're expecting of them, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So
they promised us a big win, right, Stacy?
Yes.
There's a guy, like, there are 3 months we're going to have a big win.
Well, let's get that on paper. I want to know what that big win is. Let's see. I want to see that in writing. All right. Thanks.
We do have ridership expectations. I mean, we, as part of the TOP, the planning department put out projections for ridership increases because of the TOP. And then as part of my review also, we established a bunch of specific route ridership goals. So there is some benchmarks out there to be shooting for.
There we go. Are those the benchmarks that we would have expected with or without this marketing company, or were they the benchmarks that we had laid out, you know, even if we had no marketing company?
Well, I think we talked to the board well over a year ago about when we did the TOP and to reverse the trend down ridership that we would have a big marketing campaign that associated with it. I think it was board direction, actually, mm-hmm. to do that. And I think what this effort is that we're just bringing in some outside thinking, some new ideas, et cetera, to increase the brand and increase and improve the message to make that as effective as we can.
Right. All right. Like I said, at the end of the day, we need to back out the cost of this increased marketing to see where we're at, too,
sure.
I think.
And there really is no increase in the marketing budget. It's this is coming out of an existing budget,
oh, okay.
So I'm reallocating
It's not. We're reallocating
right.
it away from in-house.
Wasn't new dollars put into it.
Right.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Council Member Bright? I believe he had a... No? Oh, Mr. Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had the same concerns as Councilmember Zapp. So the thing I was looking at is, okay, at the end of the day, I want to see what kind of return on investment we're getting on that. Is it making a difference? And so I'd like to see those benchmarks or metrics to see if we're that program is actually being effective as well.
Okay.
Thank you. And I can support it as well, but I'd like to have those metrics.
Thank you. Councilmember Alvarez?
Thank you. I'll just say I echo that just to figure out what we're doing. I have no doubt that they can help and grow the ridership, and I just like to know how that's being accomplished throughout the contract. I just want to ask about the language capabilities of the contractor. I see English and Spanish in some of the sample work. Is there anything beyond that that they provide assistance with or capabilities? You might want to come up to the microphone, please.
This is Stacy Nelson Smith. She's the CEO of Civilian.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Civilian has experience in about 13 different threshold languages throughout the state of California. Most of the campaigns we do are for underserved communities and really take some very strategic targeting. So we can adapt language, we can transadapt, or we can do a straight translation.
Are those services part of the we don't actually have the contract before us, so is that part of the contract, or is that an additional cost beyond the scope of the contract?
The contract is set up as task order based, so it is truly based on what the marketing department needs. I believe translation services is a task order within that.
Okay.
There is no budget allocated to any of the tasks.
Right. Okay. And then on the I'm looking at page 3, which maybe is the most detail we have before us today in terms of what the actual contract will produce for us. And it seems like the one where we're going to, the public outreach and public education as it relates to the initiative is going to be a large component. Well, let me start with that. Do we think that the contract is significant in terms of the amount to accomplish what is required in the outreach and education campaign of an initiative? In your experience with others and in our in-house experience or expectations? Or are we going to need to do more? It seems relatively low to me. The dollar amount that we're allocating, but I want to have real expectations.
I would be concerned about the dollar amount allocated towards that. However, I don't know what the budget is from the internal team to support that. I also don't know the timing or the expectations of the deliverables, so I can't concretely say if it is or it isn't.
Okay. Well, I can tell you, I think the at the moment, the vision is a 2020 initiative, and so it would be work over the course of the next couple of years. And given your experience with outreach and education in the Metro, was it Metro, LA
yeah.
Metro?
Yes.
Much larger system and much larger campaign slash initiative on the electoral side. How much was spent on that, do you know? Was it like, it was probably in the millions, I assume.
It was, okay. And it's a project that it would be apples to oranges and, yeah. and very unfair to compare the two.
And a lot of that was a media buy as
a
well.
A large part of that yeah. was okay. a media buy.
Okay. Well, I think just going forward, if this contract gets approved, certainly for the ad hoc committee, we need to start to get a little bit more details on what that would entail from this contract. And then on the other one I would want to talk about is the fare collection. I mean, we'd have to, that is going to require entirely new branding and packaging. I'm assuming, is that all going to be done through the contractor, or are you also planning on doing some in-house and doing some check-in and getting some advice from them? What's the path forward?
Yeah, I think they're going to give us some initial advice, okay. do some focus groups to determine, you know, how we message this. There will probably be an additional budget for the ultimate marketing and packaging of this, but mm-hmm. we want to get on the ground now with some good customer feedback as to the direction we want to go. So I don't think this $500,000 is going to take that project to its completion. We will probably need additional budget and additional help for that.
Okay, and I think that's important for all of those who are going to remain on this board beyond this year, that this is sort of the down payment on these investments, but there's going to be more required. And so I think just so the expectations are accurate for the long term, that's what we're committing to today. So thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's important to note that we actually started this process for on-call services with the marketing before we really started to have any substantive conversations about tax increase. So during the final stages of the interviews, we wanted to make sure that whoever we hired had that capability. That became important. But we don't even have a work plan yet for what product it is. The board hasn't even voted to go out yet. So in some cases, it's premature. I think the important thing to understand is that we have a firm that has the capability to help us out in that. And when the time comes, we'll do a work plan for that, and we'll bring it back. And it's probably going to be more money, especially if we're doing the ridership campaign and we're rolling out a new fare collection system and whatever else you're asking for. That's going to be a good chunk of this. And so that's more to come. And, you know, we'll keep you apprised as well as the ROIs on this with ridership, with task orders, et cetera. We can come back quarterly and report on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Appreciate that, Paul, for that clarification in terms of how the process has evolved and having a strong firm that, for me, the excitement is that we have a firm that has expertise in transit. It's not just a PR campaign. It's, in fact, a PR campaign with strong roots in transit. That's exciting. So I didn't hear a second, so I'll be happy to second this motion, Mr. Councilmember Diaz. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what we're doing today is we're going to authorize the CEO to go ahead and work with you on the contract and authorizing the $491,000. But on your presentation, I see that you interviewed the top four, and then you narrowed down to two civilian Southwest strategies. And I like the fact that you showed us the experience from civilian, but we didn't see anything on Southwest strategy. So I can support
this item, but I think going forward, I would like to see your top selection so you can see their work product. And I don't know their experience, Southwest Strategies, what experience do they have? I really don't know. I know of them, but I don't really have them.
Southwest Strategies, they're a strong group. They emphasize more on public advocacy, though. So they're a really strong group in that regard. Civilian brought some more branding, advertising strengths that the evaluation team didn't think was as strong as Southwest. I mean, stronger than
just
Southwest.
Just going forward, I would like to see the work product as well from the other ones, just so we can compare. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. It was seconded by President Cole, so I appreciate that. So with that, please, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Moves forward. Thank you. Look forward to developing the relationship.
Thank you. And I'd just like to add, as a long-term resident of San Diego and as a business owner and as an advocate of underserved communities, it is truly an honor to be able to work on this contract. The ask is big, and I adamantly believe we are the firm to do it.
Thank you so much. I look forward to working with you all. So with that, moving forward to item 31, which is the San Diego Metropolitan Transit Systems Mobility Hub application, another exciting agenda item in terms of developing our systems, utilizing technology, and improving our system. So please.
Okay, thank you. Gary Dexter of IT is joining me. Gary is actually the project manager on this, so we're going to work in concert. Gary has all the technical expertise to answer your questions on the Hub Mobile application. Marketing's role is to get a good brand to this, a good look to it. We'll probably be involved in the user experience of this, so it's going to be a team effort. As you all know, MTS has been out front in developing mobile technologies. We were one of the first groups to work with Google to get real-time information. We have our Compass Cloud application, which is a mobile ticketing solution. One Bus Away is another app that we have that gives real-time information. Our website has a wealth of information, and we developed that to be a mobile-first strategy, so you can get on your phone, go to our website, and it renders everything perfectly, and you can get schedules and trip planning and maps, and you can manage your Compass card on our website. We also have phone and texting capabilities, so there's a lot of ways you can use your phone to get information from MTS. But all of these elements are kind of standalone, and there's not one single hub where you can get all of that information easily. So the idea is to create a mobile application that is the hub for all of those services, create the single portal to all of our rider support utilities. And so we really think this is going to kind of enhance the customer mobile experience to be able to go to that one button and then launch all of these other capabilities. This developer also is going to provide new features for us, so we'll have closer integration with first mile, last mile solutions and ride share and bike share, scooter share, all that kind of stuff. You'll be able to check your Compass card balance and be able to purchase fares and reload your Compass card and reload Compass cash. And then there's also the potential integration of all of this into our next gen fare collection system. Again, you know, it was a competitive bid, received 8 responses. In this case, the Datamatics Global Services had superior scores right from the get-go. They're a huge company. They're multinational. They've got a lot of transit experience. They've worked for Cubic in transport for London. They're a Google-certified developer. So they've developed over 400 mobile apps. One of the strongest features that they had, and one of the competitive advantages, was that their subcontractor is Steer Davies Glebe. They are the contractor that built our website and our internet. They've got a lot of experience here in San Diego with Sandag and others. Really a worldwide leader in transit consultancy. So they're going to be kind of the boots on the ground here. They've got an LA office. Their project manager is very familiar with San Diego, with MTS, so he's going to be the project manager on this. So the services that this contract will provide is the mobile app development. They'll work directly with other service providers to get their APIs so it can be integrated. They'll do staff training and provide us with training materials. They'll develop a style guide that we use to guide the development and the look of the app. They'll do the maintenance documentation, and they'll have ongoing maintenance as well. We do have the ability to work with them for future upgrades and development. Delivery schedule, we want to get this up and running as quickly as possible. The goal is to get it done by the end of the year. And so you can see here some of the milestones that we will have in the delivery schedule. Again, the goal is to get it up and running by the end of the year. So project costs, app developments, almost $300,000, and then the maintenance fees are listed there for a total contract of $352,000. And our recommendation is to allow the CEO to execute that agreement for the design and development and training of the mobile app, and then to exercise the option years at the CEO's discretion.
Thank you for that. There are no public comments, requests for this item either. Councilmember Sankey.
Thank you very much, Chair Goins. I just spent a meeting yesterday at SANDAG talking about this exact application to facilitate specialized transportation, sort of the paratransit, the seniors getting out of their houses to doctor's appointments, things like that, on a much smaller scale. But as was discussed by the consultant with me, it was one app that with one payment could get your first mile and your last mile, you know, maybe incorporating taxis or Ubers on to get you to wherever the next transit connection is, and then getting you back. So it's one-stop shopping, exactly like what you're talking about. I'd like to hear either you or the consultant talk about the integration capabilities. You mentioned bike and ride share in your PowerPoint, but I really think we need to think bigger than that, the ride share companies, and also with the Lyfts and the Ubers and even the taxis. They're kind of looking for something to do. So there may be some opportunities to leverage this, and I want to hear the commitment that we have to do that.
Go ahead, Gary.
So, in fact, I'm not the consultant. I'm part of the IT team. I'm the application development and support manager. As Rob said, I'll be project managing this project, and I developed the scope for it. A key part of this scope is that the application is extensible. We are already mandating the capacity to integrate with rideshare, bike share, and, in fact, anything forthcoming. It's a fundamental requirement of the architecture that it be scalable, and it can be integrated with as yet unforeseen future functionality. So it's a core part of the requirement of this project.
So I just ask, as you move forward, to check in with Colleen Clementson and her team at SANDAG so that we're not doing duplicate efforts, and that we can, whatever comes out of this can be complementary in terms of overall transportation people moving in most efficient and cost-effective manner. Thank you.
Yes, certainly.
I think the issue is that we're the mobility provider. They're the planners. We're the providers. And so we want a central location where we can do a variety of things, whether it's to buy fares, whether it's to see how much money you got on your Compass card, whether it's to interact with our security team on a see something, say something, if we roll in a product like e-alerts so people can take pictures. There's geographic location indicators where we can send responses to getting Uber and Lyft after connecting to a trip, to planning a trip, to doing real-time information on both bus and trolley, all of those things all in one place. So we're ahead of them.
Thank you. Councilmember Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to probably ask a silly question because Jim just left us, so with one less attorney. So with regards to intellectual property, is this like work for hire where we own the code when we get done with all this?
Yeah, as always, when we procure vendor services, we own the intellectual property.
Thank you for that. Mr. Hall.
Yeah. This will be a separate app, correct? It's brand new?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we have Compass and we have MTS, and now we have a third one, and maybe a fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh or 23rd.
Well, we do, but you know, it was actually Paul that brought the vision to us, and this is a cure for that.
Okay,
this
good.
Is That's your one-stop shop, hence the branding of Hub.
Here's another option. Maybe we could book tours and book and get a percentage back off it, and book hotels too, like everybody else does.
Oh, keep that in mind.
All that stuff is possible. Okay, and especially with account-based collection system, it does get to that point where you can integrate parking and all kinds of things if we can work out those kind of needs.
Well, and that's really the, because we'd get some kind of percentage of everything that happened that way. And, you know, it would be just something to keep in mind.
Thank you. Councilmember Alvarez.
Okay, I had the question about the proprietary information. Good to know it's ours. The question about all the apps and how they work together. The only thing that remains for me, it seems from the backup in your presentation that we've actually captured it all. So I actually want to hear from you what this won't be able to do, what people should not expect from this app. I mean, it seems like everything's in here that you would want in a mobile app, to be able to know where to catch the next ride, where to know where it is along a interactive map, to know how much you need to pay, to put it all on the credit card and it automatically gets deducted. I mean, is that accurate, or is there a piece that we're missing still in terms of being really mobile friendly with this app?
I think that's accurate. I can't think of anything that we've missed from the scope. It's essentially a Swiss Army knife app for MTS. So,
and yes. This will be ready by December of this year?
We are, the project schedule is to go live on the 1st of January. So
wow.
Yes, it's aggressive really, and ambitious.
It's very exciting. Appreciate the work that staff has done on this. And the only other question is on language. Is Datamatics here? Are they present?
They're not, no.
Okay. Do you know if they're going to have multiple language options?
I do, yes. Where the initial rollout will be English and Spanish, but they have the capability for additional localization.
Okay. Thank you very much, and great work again.
If I could make one comment, too, just not to increase expectations that when we come to December, this is going to be the be-all and it. It's developing a platform, okay? We have a variety of things now that we want to consolidate and get rid of mobile apps. But what we're really doing is building a platform so that when we get a new fare collection system, that won't be on it in December because we won't have rolled it out. It provides an opportunity, you know, like a bunch of different outlets that we can now plug into and integrate into this type of thing. So that app will stay there. We'll just continually be bringing on, in my estimation, new features and new products for the customer.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for your great questions. As I said at the beginning, this is exciting. This is really taking our system to another level. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we develop by December and put it out there, and hopefully it'll work. So with that, there is a need for a motion. Is there a motion to move this forward? Motion by Mr. Councilmember Diaz, second by Councilmember Hall. So all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. All those opposed, moves forward. Thank you. So moving forward with reports, the first transit taxi cab pilot program that has been in the development for a bit. So I'll turn it over to Bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Board of Directors. I'm joined here by Jay Washburn, who is our manager of Access Paratransit and Minibus Operations. As you know, over the past couple of years, we've been proactively focusing on how we can maintain our ADA compliance, maintain our service quality, but also look for cost efficiencies and effectiveness in our access service. And so this presentation this morning is to talk about our taxi pilot update and to show you what our next initiative is going to be. As I said, we've been working hard. These are a few of the things that you've seen over the past couple of years. We've completely revised the eligibility process, and we're partnering with MTM to conduct the eligibility process and manage that. We've improved our fleet, converting it completely over to the propane fuel systems, and that has not only saved us budget savings on the fuel costs, but it's also significantly reduced our GHG emissions. We've improved with conditional eligibility. We're rolling out a travel training program to many of the agencies that we serve. And then our next initiative that I wanted to talk about today again is the taxi pilot program. We identified a scope of work with some major priorities and goals for the program. It's a one-year demonstration period. We ask our primary contractor, First Transit, to develop a subcontract with a taxi company so that we can operate this program completely underneath our existing contract with First Transit. They'll provide the program management and the oversight of this subcontract. And the service will be comparable to Access. It has to be comparable in terms of service quality, fares, rider policies, and most of all ADA requirements. The demonstration program for the next 12 months, we're focused on ambulatory customers who use Access who do not need additional assistance. And finally, we want to make sure that this demonstration program provides the same reservation and trip experience for our customers. So to do that, there's a couple of key tools. One of those, we've been able to assist First Transit, and they now have a contract with Yellow Group to provide this taxi service for as a subcontractor to the First Transit contract. The other piece you saw on the consent agenda this morning, and that was to purchase the Trapeze Trip Broker software, which will help First Transit make all of this happen. And that software is a piece that fits into our existing software system that we use for the Access service. And it allows us to do real-time trip management. The system will determine whether it's a paratransit trip or a taxi trip based upon the predetermined criteria that we set up in the system. And it doesn't accept customer requests or preferences. The trips that go to the subcontracted taxi service are specifically going there based upon our criteria that are programmed into the system and overseen and managed by First Transit. Specific customer and trip data, distance, location, destination, and of course the overall projected cost of the trip, and then availability of both Access and taxi resources. And all of those are in that Trip Broker software. And it also coordinates all of the trip scheduling data between First Transit and Yellow Taxi, and then also with the MTS staff. And it includes a very robust reporting and analytics tool that will also help us be able to manage the effectiveness and the efficiencies of the demonstration program. We'll be monitoring closely, as will First Transit. We'll be assuring that we're looking at the service quality, that it's consistent with our existing paratransit service, the Access service. It has to be comparable to the Access service. We're looking for ADA compliance. That has to be there. And then, of course, the cost effectiveness and the efficiency of the system. And then as we go through that one-year demonstration is to look how we can leverage this going forward to expand it and drive even more efficiency in the system. And then ultimately we'll also be looking at TNCs and how they may become a component of this as well. So we've got the contract in place with the taxi group. It's Yellow Group, which provides a large group of taxis in the San Diego area. We have the Trapeze software procurement. Thankfully, all of you approve that as the consent agenda. We're rolling out the information to all of our customers and our large agencies that we work with, and the pilot is set to start July 1st of 2018. This is a copy of the communication that's going to the customers. I apologize. It's a lot of information on a small slide, but it's just to show you that we've provided a lot of detailed information to our customers so that they're well aware of how the system will work. And essentially, they will be notified by our reservations and scheduling group whether a taxi is coming or whether the access paratransit vehicle is coming. And that can occur all the way up to about an hour before that trip occurs, because the system is always looking at added trips and cancellations and how trips get moved from one vehicle to the other to try to maximize the efficiency of the system. We've set up some aggressive but achievable goals for this one-year pilot. We think we can save between $15 and $20 a paratransit trip. That's somewhere between 40 to 50% of the current cost per trip. We've targeted 35,000 trips during the pilot period, and we think that we can achieve somewhere between $400,000 to $600,000 of savings in purchased transportation, and that's net of the cost to purchase the trip software. And with that, are there any questions?
Thank you for that great report. There are no public comment slips for this item either. Are there any comments from RIC Lights? I will call Councilmember Bragg.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Mr. Washburn and Bill Sprawl, thank you so much for this. I am really excited about this pilot program. As the chair of our Accessibilities Committee, this presentation will also be made this afternoon to our partner agencies, and the number is, I think, maybe 14 agencies throughout San Diego will get this information. I remember the first time we engaged, in my recent memory, the Taxi Cab Administration, and that was during our strike a number of years ago, and the taxi cabs really stepped up to the plate. So I like to think of that as our beginning point. I do have a couple of questions, though, as far as what selection. You've said that you had targeted 35 trips. What was your selection process to determine who was going to use this pilot program? If you could speak to that just a little bit.
Yeah, we did an analysis of last year's trip data, and we were looking for ambulatory access customers who don't require door-to-door assistance. And so that created the initial pool that we looked at. And then we looked at what would be an achievable percentage of those total trips, and it's about 50% of those total trips as a threshold for how we can do that. And we also looked at some of the origins and destinations, but primarily it was looking at that initial group of customers who we believe could use a taxi in this kind of a service, since they didn't require additional assistance.
So that number could grow as well?
Yes.
So this was a relatively conservative number?
It could be, yes.
Okay. The other, and I didn't see it anywhere in the presentation, and that would be a customer feedback form. So after every trip, are we going to ask, hey, how did you like this? Did it work well for you? Do you have any suggestions? So is that going to be a component of it as well?
It's not at this point, but I think that's a good suggestion, and we can look at adding that in.
Okay, that would be my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you for that, and Mr. Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we just approved the last application, and now we have another application here. Technology is great. I truly support all that stuff. But what happens sometimes is folks will have different applications in an organization, and each application has its own database, and the data shall never be the same in any other database. And so as we create applications and new technology, my question is, how are we integrating all of those databases so we normalize that data?
This is not an app.
This is not an app. This is not an app.
But there is an underlying database.
There's a software application. We have a scheduling software package called Trapeze. It's international. This initiative requires the add-on of a module, basically, that will allow us to do this specialized service within the scheduling process. There'll be certain parameters that will be put in that will identify what's good for a taxi trip, and then it'll collect the data on it and be able to supply us information. But it's all part of the same Trapeze scheduling database. It's just a separate model that will pull this out, and it's not a public app at all, just software changes.
Thank you for that. Mr. McLean.
Yes, if they don't need a access ban, why can't they be on regular transit?
Because under the Americans with Disabilities Act, not everything that qualifies a person as being disabled is always physical.
Okay. So anybody that has a disability can have an access ability.
Basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with qualification, but yes. I mean, you know, it's... Go ahead, Bill.
Well, the minimum threshold, and it's one of the reasons why we went to MTM for the eligibility process, is you have to be unable to physically or functionally use the fixed route bus or trolley system. That does not necessarily have to be a physical disability. It could be cognitive, it could be developmental. So there's a variety of things, but it starts with functionally being unable to use the fixed route bus or trolley system. So all of the access customers have to use the access vehicle. They may be able to use a taxi vehicle if they don't, for example, need the lift on the paratransit.
Well, a lot of the people that we've had speak under public comment in the past, I'm surprised that they haven't asked for access ability, because they would much rather just jump in a cab and go to where they're going rather than fool around riding the buses and the trolleys and everything else. Do we look at this as a possibility that we might have a problem in granting access to too many people, because they say, well, gee, I see them picking them up in the taxi. Why can't I do that?
Yeah, so a couple of things that we think address that and manage that. And one is we've implemented our eligibility process, so we're not going to change that. It remains in place, and our current access customers will not be able to request the use of a taxi. The system will determine. So literally, an access customer could, if they travel 5 days a week, they could be picked up in a taxi on Monday, an access vehicle on Tuesday and Wednesday, maybe a taxi on Thursday, and maybe an access vehicle on Friday, and it could alter every day as the system manages which one is best. So our customers will not be able to request the use of a taxi. So some customers may see taxi service because their trip fits within the model. Other customers who may technically be eligible to have their trip on a taxi may never get one, because it just doesn't fit in the parameters.
Well, if they don't need assistance, why wouldn't a taxi be more effective for everybody that has an access?
Right, and as what we're going to determine during the demonstration period is, can we move forward with this model and continue to expand it to see how we can maximize that
and
process.
In the future, maybe we'll need less access vehicles.
Yes. Yes.
I think ultimately, if there's a vision with this, okay, it might be using rideshare services or some byproduct of that, where we may have a structure almost like an Uber or Lyft, where we have those drivers as part of our pool, and then we draw upon those for use only when we need their services. I mean, right now we have a fleet of vehicles, we have drivers that report, et cetera. There's a lot of overhead cost in that. You know, someday, and there's a lot of challenges still with the feds and other things in just using Uber and Lyft that we can't get to. With drivers with yellow cab, I mean, they're going to be subject to drug testing and all of the federal requirements. So this is a place to start, and that's why we're doing the pilot, to see how this works and if it can be expanded. So.
Councilmember Saff.
Thank you.
And this is exactly what I've been talking about for quite a while, especially at Sandag, about the need for being more nimble, more flexible, and that, and I think I've said it here, I, you know, believe that ride share is transit because that's is what people are using, and if we could get it categorized as such, it seems like we could have transit dollars available to use for ride share. So I know where I think I know where Mr. McClellan was coming from because I was having a lot of the same questions, and I think you kind of got to the bottom line toward the end there. It's that we're moving maybe in that model because it seems a lot less or a lot more cost effective, shall I say, to use the cabs or rideshare or whatever instead of having all of these access buses. Now, you're going to still need some probably for people who are, you know, physically disabled and wheelchairs, need lifts and all that. But like Mr. Jablonski was saying, there are, I mean, if you're blind, you know, you're disabled and need these types of services. A question I do have is, what distance can you go? You're paying $450 one way. Is there a circumference involved, or can you literally go from the most southern point of the city to the most northern point?
You literally could. We have to provide paratransit access service in a 3/4 mile range of our entire fixed route system. Mm-hmm. So the trapeze system is programmed with what those boundaries are, and they're literally drawn on a geographic map. The average access trip is about 7 to 8 miles in length. So we do have some trips that may get up to about 20 miles, but those are outliers. The overwhelming majority of our access trips really sit within a couple of miles either side of that average.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was literally just talking about with somebody yesterday as we were discussing a community plan update at the city having to do with the Midway area is that there's so many people, for example, now going to, and it's growing even more, to Liberty Station, you know, just some more flexible van, not ADA, but just, you know, van type loops that go right to, it's so close over there, the Old Town Transit Station. And so a lot of people, you could get to Old Town, but then it's like trying to just get like such a close distance to Liberty Station. Lots of events, lots of people, lots of things going on, and frankly, a lot of traffic because we're almost forcing people to drive. And so I think looking at, again, these more flexible, smaller scale, more frequent to some of these really high, high crowds, whatever, mm-hmm. destinations, and it, maybe even looking at it on special event type days, like at Christmas, it was crazy over there. And so, anyway, like to look at that, not just on the with our smaller vans. Maybe we can use this for a lot more of the ADA, and then use our smaller vans for the loops or something like that. All right. But thank you for this. Looking forward to seeing how this works. Thank you.
Council President, I'm going to call President Cole. And then Ms. Breck. I don't know who was first here.
I think you were. I mean.
Okay.
I have the same question as Councilmember Zapp about the distance, and you answered that. Thank you. And I'm glad that we're utilizing the taxi cabs because a lot of people were opting out because of one reason or the other, and they were really suffering. And I'm glad that now we're utilizing, and we're going to keep the quality of the taxi cabs up because that was another reason people were opting out. Yeah, and so that this is a great pilot. I hope that it's successful, and just keep us and that we keep up the standard of the taxi cabs, especially for our vulnerable population. Appreciate this report, and I think it's going to be a great success. Oh, hope it will. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Paul. Okay. Councilmember Bragg.
I just wanted to make a comment. One of the things that I pride ourselves here at MTS is that we are transformational in people's lives. And I said that when we had the low floor cars coming on the blue line and how that transforms people's lives. This will be transformational for people who use our access system to be able to have a cab come to their home. I think it's going to be much more in somebody's mind who is disabled when you can just get in a cab like everybody else. You know, so I'm very excited to see this program expand. I, at one time in my life, was in a wheelchair and had to use access vehicles. So at that time, if I had a collapsible wheelchair and it could have been stowed in a cab trunk, the stigma of being disabled would have almost evaporated. So again, I just really want us to embrace that, and I appreciate my colleagues' comments and how this will be, again, something transformational that we're doing here at MTS. Thank you.
Thank you for that and for that reminder. It's really important in terms of ensuring that we're serving all our customers, and the disabled community is definitely really important. Councilmember McLean.
Yes, I have another question. Do we know what percentage of the people that we have transporting that actually need a lift van or special assistance, and what percentage would qualify to ride in a cab?
Yeah, we know that about 25% of our ridership are in mobility devices that require the lift. But then there's another fairly significant percentage, and I don't have that number with me, that that require the lift, but they may not have a mobility device, or they need the specialized door-to-door service that the driver has to require to help them from wherever they're going or their residence. And I don't have those numbers. We'll have to get those.
Well, door-to-door would be like a cab.
Door-to-door, our access driver provides physical assistance from the drop-off point all the way to the entrance of the facility. And during this demonstration, we're not going to do that with the taxi because that takes another level of training and requirement level on the taxi cab provider.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you all for a very fruitful discussion and questions. And this is, I'm just going to echo Councilmember Bragg. This is really exciting. It is taking a system that we already provide into the next level. So thank you for the great thinking behind it and also supporting our cab industry. I think it's a good partnership. So with that, this is just an informational item, no need for a motion. So thank you. Moving forward to the operations budget status report. Yes, Paul, sorry.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of enthusiasm about doing all of access with this, but we're doing a pilot because there's a lot of other issues. Quality of service, but quality of service that complies with the federal regulations. I mean, we have one of the reasons that we have our own fleet that we do this is that we have control over it. So when we do the schedule, we know we can put service out there to meet the demand. Meeting the demand is not an option. It's a federal requirement. So if cabs are serving Comic-Con and we want to carry 1,000 disabled people and they don't want to show up for it, that's not an option. So that's why we're doing this as a pilot to study it, because we have to have that capability all the time. We can't be subject to the cabs going to do something else. So that's why we're starting here. And hopefully it gets to a point with us learning and the cab companies learning where they can do dedication to guarantee that we have that capability. So I just wanted to say that quality of service, on time, trip length, all those things are federal requirements that we have to make sure we comply with. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for adding that, Paul. So with that, moving forward with our financial review.
Yes, good morning. We're going to present the results for April of 2018 as compared to the mid-year budget. Taking a look at operating revenues, first line, fare revenues, We are unfavorable by $335,000, or 0.4%. As we've been talking about ridership has continued to its downward decline, and so that's really impacting fare revenues. We foresee May and June as being somewhat achievable, so we're not expecting that number to become more unfavorable for the rest of the fiscal year. Operating revenues did come in higher than expected, which offset that fare revenue projection, $600,000 favorable, or 4.2%, which drove our total operating revenues favorable by $267,000, or 0.3%. From an expense standpoint, total operating expenses were unfavorable by $647,000, or 0.3%. It was primarily driven by other expenses, which were materials and supplies for the month. There are more issuances than we had targeted for the month, but we're looking at ways to tighten the belt for the upcoming 2 months to mitigate any further unfavorable variances. So pulling it all together, again, total operating revenues were favorable by $267,000, operating expenses unfavorable by close to $650,000, giving us a net combined net operating variance unfavorable of $380,000, or 0.3%. And just as a reminder, we do have in the budget a carry forward, or an expected carry forward, of $500,000 for fiscal year 2019. So in actuality, it's about a $900,000 number that we're trying to catch up on for the final 2 months of the fiscal year. And again, staff is looking at ways to tighten the belt and to get back to that number. As always, we look at ongoing concerns. Given that we're 10 months into the fiscal year, we're able to kind of target where we are here. Sales tax subsidy revenues we're projecting to be on target, about $440 million gross for the region. One of the areas of favorable areas is the state of California budget is expected to be favorable. We just got the latest projections from the state, about $1.5 million greater than what we have in the amended budget, so that's a positive. Passenger levels are pretty close to being on target, just slightly below what we have in the amended budget. And from an energy price perspective, propane, diesel, and gas are pretty much on target. CNG is favorable by a few pennies, but the continued ongoing concern is electricity. We have an amended budget of 20.8 cents and projecting at 21.4, which is a continued issue here. And that wraps up my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Alvarez.
Just on that last slide, how the projection on the revenue is 439. That is inclusive of the state of California's budget? Or?
No, that's exclusive. This is primarily TDA and Transnet gross revenues for the region, and of which we get a percentage of.
Okay.
But we want to take a look at it from a gross perspective, because if we have gross revenues that are exceeding what the projections are, we should get a ratable share. We would expect Transnet to be maybe a couple $100,000 more than what we expected.
And why is that not considered a favorable?
Primarily because of the materiality of the difference. It's, you know, $3 million on $436 million. So it is favorable.
$3 million
is... but of which we get a smaller percentage of. So
okay.
it is absolutely a favorable variance. There's no doubt
okay.
about that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that clarification question. Any other questions or comments from board members? I see none. So thank you so much for the report. Really appreciate it. Moving forward with the report from Councilmember David Alvarez on the ad hoc ballot measure committee work that we've done.
Yes, thank you very much. And this is just to keep the board appraised of the ad hoc work that occurred. We had our first meeting last month, and we will be reporting on a regular basis to the board the work that we engage in. Let me start off by sharing with you the dates of our next meetings, just so that you all have them, and if you need them, staff can also provide these to you. But our next meeting is scheduled for July the 20th at 1:30 in the afternoon. Then we have a meeting on September the 7th, also at 1:30, and November the 9th at 1:30. So those will be our next meetings for the rest of the year. We wanted to set those so that you all could come and participate if you're interested in, and anybody else who might want to join us. I wanted to share briefly the sort of large ticket items that we discussed. We reviewed Measure A and the results of Measure A within the MTS jurisdiction. We got a chance to see what the numbers look like in terms of what we have to work with. And then we had extensive discussion on the different services and primarily consultant services that are going to be required by MTS in order to be able to put forward a measure for the voters that is accurate and reflective of the priorities of MTS. So let me start by mentioning Civilian, which was a contract that was just approved. We just approved today, which will focus on some of the planning efforts, some of the marketing efforts to try and get the information out to the public. We also currently have on contractual basis two services that are going to be important for a potential ballot measure. Muni services, which provides financial analysis, so we're going to have to determine how much revenue could be generated within our jurisdiction, and that's going to require some analysis to be done, and so that contract already exists. The other contract that exists is legal contract with Best, Best, and Krieger. Obviously, as a brand new authority that MTS has under AB 805, need to make sure that we proceed with all of the legal requirements required in the ballot and in the bill language for the ballot. The most important part of this is going to be trying to understand what expenditures we want to bring on board as part of an initiative, part of a ballot measure. And so that is going to require plan development. It's going to require a lot of community input, obviously board input and board decision making in the future. And so it's my understanding, and maybe Paul or someone might want to clarify, that we will be bringing a contract forward for that with TMD, or is that an existing contract? Okay.
We're in the process of defining scope and cost right now.
Okay.
And probably, so Sharon, July? July will bring that.
And again, this is for the actual work to plan, to define what the expenditures are, to define what we want to pursue in terms of, and to understand what the costs would be associated with any services and or increase in transit options provided by MTS. And then finally, if the board makes a decision after all that information is presented to the board, to do that, we will need to make sure we have a political consultant hired that understands the landscape of the electorate, to try and understand what their desires are, and that would be all of that other information I just mentioned would be incorporated as part of the work that they do, and that is also a contract that will be coming to this board for selection at a future date. So again, the next meeting is in July 20th. If you're available, you're welcome to join us to have that discussion, and I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Definitely a very thorough report, and it was our first meeting, and it was very exciting. I think we did good work there, good direction. So looking forward in the development. I do not have anything to report or see. Yep.
Thank you. So I think most of you got the press release, but we were in Denver this weekend for the APTA National Rail Conference. And as you know, we won the APTA's Gold Award for Safety this year. And what we had submitted was our idea to reduce accidents in the downtown area. You know, we have a lot of problems, especially on C Street, where we're running with street lights, where cars come down and they just turn right in front of the train. And in the 18 months before we did this, we actually had 10 vehicular accidents with that. We came up with this delineator idea, worked with the city of San Diego, installed the delineators, and for the next 17 months after that, had zero accidents. So 100% reversal on that. So we described all that along with our safety program, along with the new policy that we're now compliant with SMS, and we won the Gold Award, which is right here, and we were recognized for that. There was probably 700 of our peers there at the conference, and we, as part of it, we had to put together a short video to tell everybody what the program is. So why don't you run that, Julia? So maybe Wayne and Dave Bagley is our rail safety manager. You can stand up and wave along with. It was an interesting conference, and I after going to these for about 45 years, you look for things that you can learn. There's no doubt in my mind in the next, I don't know, might be year or whatever, that we're going to have unmanned aerial vehicles or drones flying along our right of way to do track safety inspections and other things to monitor our assets. That technology is going places where it's unbelievable in what the capability is. I mean, they were talking about having these unmanned vehicles with video capability and LIDAR and infrared capability that only weigh an ounce, and that you could launch a handful of those, and they would hover all around a bridge and do all kinds of video inspection of that bridge, apply it against an application that would look for stresses, cracks, deterioration, et cetera, and then print out a whole report for you. So it's amazing where this stuff is going. But track inspection is already being done. We have a lot of manpower in track inspection, a lot of effort. This could really help us in the future. So it was a very exciting conference.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for that report. And once again, congratulations for doing the amazing work that you're doing and keeping our system safe and the public safe as well. So with that, are there any board member communication reports? None. There are no additional public comment requests. So that concludes our meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for July 26, 2018. Thank you.